This is UMFM 101.5. Good afternoon, and welcome to UTalk. It's a program dedicated to diversity, highlighting Native-born and new Canadians' cultures and experiences. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. When the COVID-19 pandemic first hit back in March 2020, it was a real challenge for students and teachers learning to adjust to this new environment. In today's episode, we talk with two experts of online learning and tips and techniques for newcomers taking English language classes. Tawil Leroux is a huge proprietor of technology and believes if you don't get on board with it, you'll fall behind. A career consultant, e-learning specialist, Taiwo has applied his personal and professional experiences to help newcomers find and succeed in their careers.
My name is Taiwo Leroux, as you already know, and 7 years ago, I moved to Canada. I was born and raised in Nigeria, and I live most of my life on the streets of Lagos. Exactly 7 years ago, I made a change in my career to move to a new country, and it's been a roller coaster of emotions having to reach this decision at this point in my career life. Coming to Canada has provided a lot of positive opportunities, but I'm fast tracked to what I currently do. My role is e-learning specialist for Manitoba Start. Manitoba Start is the first place where newcomers find the support they need to find work in Manitoba. Prior to that, I was supervisor for the career services unit, and I was also a career coach and facilitator. So essentially, all of the work that I've done has moved from a bit of adult education, career advising, and just providing those supports that newcomers need to transition into employment in Manitoba. As a newcomer myself, my experiences, my knowledge, and my learning over the years has influenced my practice and experience, and I can bring in that professional perspective, I can bring in that cultural perspective, I can share experiences, that's not going to be far from what other newcomers also go through on a daily basis. And I think all of this put together has been able to, help me in providing those supports for the clients that, that I've been working with in the last 7 years.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was just about to ask. Like, you started from humble beginnings, and like, did that inspire you, to go into this sort of work?
I find that, in terms of my professional experience, the experiences of many of the clients we work with, they are pretty much the same. We see people who have lived their years, up to their professional life in certain cultures and occupational markets, and having to take that 360-degree shift at a point in their life to start mm-hmm. all over again usually poses a huge challenge, for people to start all over, rebuild connections, navigate the market, etc. So it's a challenging process, but the opportunities that lies ahead are very, very significant too. Mm-hmm.
So what are your recommendations for newcomers, maybe even based off of your own experiences, for finding employment in Canada and getting started?
Fantastic. So I will say that the labor market in Canada can be very confusing to navigate for many newcomers. When I came to Canada 7 years ago, I was confused. I didn't even know where to start or how to start. So I think being able to walk through that process allows for a very smooth transition into the job market. The first thing that I want to offer as an advice is that, for every newcomer out there, start with a plan. I see people every day within my community, within my professional life, who say, I want a job. I just have to pay my bills. I have to get busy. But what does that really mean in terms of an actual work, in terms of an actual industry or sector or position? And you see, if you don't create a plan for what you want to do on the short term, medium term, and long term, then you are not able to stay focused on an occupational area that you'll be able to grow in. So I want to encourage every newcomer out there that reads this or listens to this to begin with a plan. what work do I want to do? What industry or sector? And how do I want to grow in this area? The second point is that Manitoba is unique among all the provinces and territories because we have support systems like no other province in Canada. And that is something that I really feel proud about, even in my practice and community life. We have abundant support services within the community for newcomers. So locating and embracing those support services will help you to quickly find employment and integrate into the fabrics of Canadian society. So if you look at our organization, for instance, we provide career development support, and clients who come through Manitoba Start to Assess services, they fast track into the market if we compare them apple for apple for other clients who don't access services. There are language training services within the community that are available and accessible for newcomers for free. There are technology training programs, self-learning initiatives. There are other newcomers like ourselves who have become voices within the community who can share, some of the ideas and challenges we face. So that kind of fast tracks things for everyone to be able to navigate the system as quickly as possible. What else can I talk about? You can't have enough of education. My father tells me each time, there's no knowledge that is lost. And so one great way to quickly establish and launch your career in Canada is just to upskill. Take a training, take a course, attend a professional development event. What else can I talk about? Just find ways to upgrade your skills. We already, coming from abroad, already prepares you with the foundational skills and experiences you need for success. It's like having a cake, and now all you need to do is just put the icing on the cake. So that upskilling, that extra training is really the icing you need to make your cake beautiful. So again, looking for opportunities to upskill. And then finally, I will say, engage, connect with your community. Find opportunities to build connections, because when people move to a new country, they leave their connections, they leave their entire community behind. It can provide a very isolated feeling. So finding ways to belong to a community, religious community, social groups, educational groups, professional communities, those are some of the factors, that can help you to just hit the ground running.
Mm-hmm. You're also an e-learning specialist. I guess let's talk a little bit about, the challenges that e-learning brings in and, the benefits, because, right now in a pandemic, that's the only way to learn.
One of the things that I say is that technology is the way for the future, and you will do yourself a whole lot of harm if you don't embrace technology as quickly as possible. When COVID hit in March, it provided very unique opportunities for everybody, learners, educators, post-secondary, literally everybody. And so we see a lot of programs and services moving into remote delivery. One of the big advantages of the face-to-face learning is that it provides for that in-person connection. So as an example, I do a lot of facilitation, and when I facilitate workshops, we can connect directly with the group of clients that we have. They can ask questions and they can feel the onus is on the presenter to make all those connections happen, right? But in a face-to-face, it's not the same. Most of the learning is self-directed in a face-to-face environment, and then you have to be self-directed in your approach. You have to be ready to do independent work where the facilitator is not there. For many newcomers, that might be something that is different, but it's not impossible. It's just quickly adapting into the new environment. One of the things that I wanted to talk about again is actually the learning space in itself. If you're in a face-to-face learning environment, it's different in the format that the facilitator creates the space, ensures that the space is ready, the space is safe and conducive for learning. There is that positive, air within the room. But in an online delivery, the onus is now on the learner to create you know, that space. So think about a newcomer who comes to Canada with four children, lives in a very small two-bedroom unit, and they have to create a convenient space for them to be able to take their programs and services. If the children are not yet engaged in schoolwork, that poses a challenge to have that quiet, safe, quiet environment for learning. So that's something to that I want, I think people can think about. Again, you know, learning in a face-to-face environment provides for that community of learners. You know, there's, you belong to a group of 12, 15 people. That's your first network to start with, right? So you feel that connection. You feel like you belong to a group. In the online environment, or those we can replicate that through some live sessions. The feeling is not the same because now you can exchange contacts. You can talk about some personal issues that are affecting you. You can talk about what this person is doing about their settlement or what that person is not doing. So we see that that is a little bit restricted and out of the scope. So that can also be a challenge. And I think that it's just a game changer for everybody at this time. But like I said, you know, adaptability is the key thing. Even this, if this is happening to you at the initial time, just quickly walk around it. And, you know, it's the way to go for the future.
Of course. You talk a lot about adaptability. Is that something? Whoops. Just knocking my mic around.
Sure.
You talk about adaptability. Is that something that you learned, you know, through your personal journey from Nigeria coming over to Canada?
I wanted to say that growing up, you know, I had very humble experiences, and you have to live through life building a lot of resilience, adapting to multiple circumstances, and living through everyday challenges. And that's been a part of me. That's the reason for, you know, for all the successes that I've achieved in life. So there are periods when you'll be out of money. There are periods when you're not sure what the next direction is. There are periods when life circumstances will provide opportunities and challenges. And so I had, going through all of these experiences has helped me to become a lot very resilient, to become a lot very adaptable, to take things and you know, have a quick turnaround within a short time. And so when I look at everything that I have done in 7 years living in Canada, I'm really thankful that all of these changes can come. It's a part of, you know, what you grew up with, you know, all of the challenging times you've lived through, all of those periods when you live through difficult circumstances and you still find ways to navigate them to get to your goal. Right. And so as an example, if I come into Canada and I have $20,000 as an example, okay, and my rent is very expensive, in another 6 months, it's very unlikely that I won't have spent a lot of this money on rent, purchasing a vehicle, family needs, etc. But what happens to a newcomer who goes out without money? Your ability to quickly, you know, create and initiate a budget system that helps you to take care of all of your anticipated expenses, knowing that you might run out of cash and you're so much on your own, 500 or 6,000 nautical miles away from wherever you call your home country. So putting all those buffers in place and knowing that, you know, right now you're on your own, you have to adapt to the situation, adapt to the conditions, adapt to the labor market, adjust to weather conditions, navigate the market, put yourself out there, face your struggle, essentially. So I think, you know, it's a part of growing up. It's a part of what forms your value systems and helps you project and shape your future. Fantastic. Many newcomers, when they come to Canada, they leave everything behind. They leave their community, they leave their associations, they leave their network. And I think Around the world, I can say specifically that culture is everywhere and community is everywhere. So when I came into Canada, there are people who live in Canada. You know, the way of life might be slightly different. You know, value systems might be different, but culture is culture everywhere, and culture is everything. As an example, the way I'm dressing is a reflection of my culture. The way I make my hair, you know, my value systems, considerations of what I think is right or wrong. One way to stay connected with your culture is to look for a related organization. There are professional associations. There's the Nigerian Professionals in Manitoba. I attend their events once in a while just to stay connected with that community. There are religious associations to which we attend as a family. We attend social gatherings. I'm talking about other cultural elements. In the home, I speak other languages with my kids just to get them connected, you know, to get them involved in understanding what that background is. So joining associations, community groups, social groups, even professional associations within the context of your cultural background, that's one piece. And I think the bigger piece also is building connections with the larger society, because you have to integrate with the mainstream Canadian culture. You have to find out what's important, what's right, what's valuable, and why those really are. And so it's not really getting rid of your culture, but it's just really about learning and unlearning and, you know, building on new cultural artifacts and, you know, increasing through that process, increasing your cultural lens and, you know, getting exposed to, you know, all of those different broader cultures within the mainstream society. In my experience, I find that it takes time for transitions to happen in the workplace. When a newcomer comes to Canada today, ask them what they want to do. They said, I want to work. When do you want to work? I want to work like yesterday. I want to work even before I landed. If you see what I mean. And the factors are very clear. You know, it's expensive to live in a place like Canada. You know, as an example, I used to joke with my clients, say, you know, the amount of money I pay for my rent per month is what I pay for 1 year before I move to Canada. So that can be a big change, even if you have a lot of money in your pocket. So it's important as you come in, as you're immigrating, as you're stepping your foot into Canada, have a clear plan what you want to do and begin to build connections within industry, within your professional level, right from the get-go. That is critical. That is important. The other thing that I wanted to say is, aside from having a clear plan of what you want to do, now you need to look out there. Where are the support systems that I have, and how can I build on those support systems so that I can consolidate? As an example, when I came to Canada, I didn't know Manitoba Stat. And so having worked with this organization for 5 years, I'm like, my career would have been propelled way faster if I've engaged with some of these community groups and service providers and taking these free benefits that the government provides. And finally, I'd like to say anything is possible. It's doable. Put your mind to it, get ready to do it, and you will achieve success.
For new Canadians wanting to learn settlement skills or English, learning from home has many challenges, including a quiet space to focus or a lack of technology. John Allen is a trainer, educator, writer, and a presenter. A dedicated education specialist with diverse experience driven to learn, teach, and innovate. John touches on the shift to online learning during the pandemic and services in place for educators and students.
So I'm John Allen. I'm really an educator from Canada. I've spent 16 of the last 20 years overseas, but I've always had a connection with Canada and the settlement and language teaching sector of Canada through the TESOL Ontario, the TESOL Canada, and a project called the Avenue or the Learn IT to Teach project that is nationwide at this moment. And I've been writing and presenting through Canadian blogs, magazines, and through conferences, both face-to-face and online for the last 2 decades. I've been in this sort of genre for 30 years. I started off at Niagara College quite a long time ago, teaching immigrants from Poland during that boom for the immigrants. And I got sort of hooked on it, and I've been doing it ever since. In my first year, I saw a computer lab. I did have computer science experience for my first degree at Brock University. And I saw it and I thought, man, you could use those to potentially teach language. It was a new concept to me. And I ran a few workshops, tried a few things, and I was hooked. And so I've been doing that ever since.
Mm-hmm. So what attracted you to helping teach immigrants to the region, and what pulled you overseas? Because you were gone for many years.
Oh, okay. What really got me helping immigrants is my mother is an immigrant herself. And so I felt her experience a bit. I was a bit, of course, she was here long before I was born. But then my parents were sponsoring her sisters and her relatives over and watching what that was all about. So what was a Canadian? It was kind of one of those things that it was always sort of changing in my mind. Like, and then looking around and seeing how the cities are changing, the demographics were changing. And I kind of felt like a lot of empathy because I was the son of an immigrant. And seeing that how immigration makes Canada stronger, just through my workplace experiences and my experiences in my teens and 20s. So I have an affinity for it. But once I got into teaching and I realized I could actually be part of this solution, it really is something that hooked me in for sure. For me going overseas, I did spend, my dad was in the Royal Canadian Air Force. And so we spent some time in Germany and Belgium. And as part of that, my father was very interested in history. So we were taking weekend sorties to different parts of Europe. And it was very interesting to me. And my mother was an avid history reader. So I got that kind of bug. So for me, traveling overseas was just something I always wanted to do. So I did different dips. And then I took it more seriously with my family. We moved to the United Arab Emirates in 2000. And then we transferred to Qatar to a Canadian project. And that was 16 years over the last 20. And the thing is that both systems that I worked in, college systems, were language training, language learning. And they also were Canadian based. The Abu Dhabi curriculum was based on Fanshawe College from Ontario. And the Qatar project was started and managed for maybe 15 years by the government of Newfoundland's College of North Atlantic College Administration. So it wasn't like I really left Canada. It was really strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So how does it feel to be back?
It feels amazing, of course, because of the COVID times and all of that. Feel safe here. Feel stable. I don't feel like I'm going to have an accident every time I drive a car. That's kind of a funny thing, if you could see what I had to drive through every morning. But essentially, Canada, it's an amazing place to be. I love this country. And I have, you know, back with my friends and relatives. And also, things are more like your expectations of the day. When you wake up, you sort of know what's going to happen here. But where I was, it wasn't always the same way.
Yeah, I guess it's very interesting just that different perspective of culture shock. You know, we talk with a lot of people who, you know, come from overseas and are adjusting to culture here in Canada. You had to, you know, adjust to culture in another place.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And then the reverse culture shock as well, coming back.
It's coming back again.
The last few months have been just crazy. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's good crazy, you know.
Well, transitioning into that kind of tech/learning perspective, so what do you see are the benefits of online learning, especially during, you know, the current ongoing pandemic?
Okay, so can we take a little half step back there?
Yeah, of course.
So for up until, let's say, March, I guess, we were pretty well stuck in the mode of hesitant blended learning. So our hybrid learning, where the teacher would have the technology and through the web or through some apps or through programs on their workstations at work, and they would blend them into their instruction. And so that was my specialty for over 20 years. And I've been writing a lot of blogs about that and trying different things and trying to get the experience. And I have been doing online for the years as well, all these years, but online was, you know, not popular. Like I was into the MOOC thing. I still am. And so for the MOOCs, I was joining them, learning, and then looking around at my staff when I came back, and I wanted to talk to people about it. And then I would say, I ran a few MOOC workshops I was in Qatar by this time at the Canadian College. And I went to a few conferences, I presented on MOOCs. And so I would say, how many people in this room have completed a MOOC, like a massive online open course? And one maybe out of 40 people would raise their hand. I was like, all that wealth, all that knowledge, it's free, it's there. Why aren't people reaching out for it? I still haven't solved that mystery, why these things weren't super booming before. But anyway, so I've had that experience with different organizations. And I do understand, because I have taken some online courses that were just asynchronous, and they were really boring, and that you could tell that the documents were made in 1998 and photocopied and scanned and then put up. You know, so you can see why people are hesitant if they hit a few of those. So anyway, so that's up until March was the blended learning. I did my best to get all sorts of folks involved with workshops and stuff and the blogs. But the online learning phenomenon hit me just as hard as anybody else. It was all of this sudden, I was ready, right? I felt I was ready. Well, I felt I was ready. And then it actually happened. And what happened with me was my role was shifted from teacher to support for other folks, right? So at this moment, I have 124 teacher mentees or people I foster along. And if they have problems with their online learning, with the link system, the settlement of new Canadians, they teach them. And if they have problems, I am available to help them through email. I also support a help desk for the Avenue Project. I'm on a few hours a week and people can ask me questions. So my role really switched from teacher, direct frontline teacher, to support. So I support in all sorts of different ways. And in this way, it's really weird. I'm writing a blog post now about this, is how this has informed me on the perspectives I'm getting from teachers who are frustrated, teachers who are successful, student frustration, people forgotten in the system, all that kind of stuff. I get to see and experience in real time, not just read about it in a journal. So it's very interesting. But the benefits of it, which is your real question, the benefits of online learning, I guess I would say the benefits are if the classes are asynchronous, where the teacher puts something up and the student can do it in their own time, it benefits people because they can do it on their own time, on their own schedule, especially if they have families or if they have multi student families, I guess, where one student, you might only have one working computer in the house with a link to the internet. And so you have to actually really schedule everybody's learning around classes and different courses. And if you have many people in the house, learning on your own time is a really good thing. Repetition is an amazing thing. So hopefully the instructor has put something up that you can do and get some instant feedback if you can. And then you can repeat that until you have mastery learning, which means you've done it enough times that you can you say, oh, well, I've got it. Sort of Kung Fu, right, in the old movies. Also, the richness of media that you see nowadays on online learning courses, especially this new tool called H5P. H5P comes from Norway. It's a project from Norway, and it's really, really taking off. So if anybody goes to H5P and can see some samples, It gives instant feedback. You can have movies with questions and comments and redirects, navigation layered on top of the movie. You don't have to go to another site. Don't have to go to another window. It's ingenious, but they have all sorts of amazing things. They actually have 3D tours now that you can put like questions on. It's really, really cool. So there's a lot of rich media. Of course, you can put your Vimeo and your YouTube videos on with comments and stuff like that. The students can interact online through different, all sorts of communication devices now. And at the moment, that's what I can think of. But the new phenomenon of Zoom, the Zoom is a big one. So you have these synchronous classrooms. So Zoom is kind of a funny one because I read that it was actually an offshoot of the corporate one. The corporate one was, what was that? Oh, I can't remember it right now, but I read the history of Zoom, and I was working at HSBC Bank for a while in Buffalo, New York. And we were using the predecessor to Zoom to communicate with other banks and do our training. I was a trainer at the bank. I was training people across North America. And we would have to have a telephone hooked up. The actual Zoom, and that wasn't Zoom, it was the previous one, but it was called WebEx. So you would have this computer screens, everybody could see everybody, but you physically still had to have a telephone to be speaking to each other, which was kind of odd, I thought. Yeah, so anyway, the guy who invented Zoom, or is the CEO of Zoom, he said he was using that to call the customer's complaints, and then he made a better product. And so we have Zoom. But anyway, for Zoom, I was really pleasantly surprised to see that over the last few months, they've really upped their product, and it's even better and better for us. There's new upgrades, like I upgraded just this morning. There's a product called Big Blue Button that we use on our project. It's quite similar, but it was actually from the ground up designed for classrooms. So we love using the Big Blue Button in our project. That's similar to Zoom, right? You can do polling, you can share whiteboards and all that kind of stuff like that. But that really brings life to the teaching, and it gives the teachers the opportunities to really communicate with the students. First of all, bandwidth is a problem. Do the students have devices that can handle, like that can do this? Can they afford these? Can they afford devices, or can they afford the internet? And that brings all sorts of issues of a deficit between students, and some students can't even participate when you use that heavily in a course. Some systems they ask the teachers to be on for 3 or 4 hours a session, which would make people exhausted, teachers and the students. So having a mix of that Zoom technology and asynchronous activities is probably the best way to go if you can set your system up like that.
How are new Canadian learners coping with online learning during the pandemic?
So I think new Canadians, the learners that I've been dealing with across Canada online, during this pandemic, they've really been improving steadily from March when we had the first lockdowns. And not just the students, but the actual teachers have really, really ramped up their game and adapted. And I see that we've had two terms since March. The first term, it was just everybody scrambling around, just trying to hang on to the boat, I guess you could say. And then in September, when we did our second term, everybody was much improved, but still not at the level that they could have. Well, you know, still not confident with what's going on. And that includes the learners, and that includes the instructors. So now I think we're at a place where everybody feels much more confident, of course. They know the routines. And so we're in a better place to start off in January. But the learners themselves, they have gone through quite a struggle to adopt new learning techniques such as asynchronous learning online, synchronous learning online, which means what they're using Zoom, for example, to stay on and listen and participate in classes, watching people on a screen, watching things on a screen, not being in a classroom, which takes a lot of getting used to. And there's a lot of fatigue factor as well.
Of course, like it's just can be a little overwhelming at times.
Oh, absolutely. And some of the different institutions, I'll just call them institutions, the bodies, some have gone pretty well to all asynchronous, where the activities are online and the teacher sort of interacts with them sparsely, rarely. Others have the situation where the students and the teachers are on for blocks of, say, 3 hours in a row, where they're actually online, engaged, and doing activities through Zoom. And some of the students do that twice a day, so 6 hours on a computer a day. So that is quite challenging in many ways. But from what I've seen so far, I really honestly expected a lot of students just to drop off and quit. And it hasn't been like that. Most of the students are still participating, coming and adapting. And I think that shows that the people who have come to Canada, like, and the teachers, everybody has their background knowledge, their core knowledge, and they've used that to adapt to the new situation. So I think right now, I think the majority of learners are doing well.
So what are educators and institutions doing to improve the situation overall in terms of e-learning?
Okay, so what educators and institutions are doing at the moment, I think what we've been doing for the last few months is the teachers really recognize that this is not a one-term problem or one-term issue. We might be in this situation for a few more terms to come. So the buy-in for training and extra tutelage and coaching of teachers has been embraced by the teachers across, from my experience, Canada. And they've been learning all sorts of new things. And institutions and support groups have been putting on webinars like nobody's business. I mean, I think I attended 13 this year, 13, learning new skills on how to apply new techniques and things I had never heard of before. It's just a boom of technology being integrated into education. So there's all these webinars coming from nonprofits, from institutions, from for-profits, all sorts of them everywhere you look. And they're really good because not only are they live events, but if you want to go, say, in a month and you don't know anything, say, for example, about flipped learning, you can go to a website that had a webinar on flipped learning, click on it, and then just watch it, and then possibly download some of the resources that are associated with that video. There's been another explosion of online conferences. So normally there are educational online conferences globally. If the institutions or organizations wanted to make that happen, make their conference happen, there's a couple of odd things that happen with this, or serendipitous things. The first one is I went to the Tesla Ontario conference in Toronto, online, of course, virtually. And the first thing was everything was on one app, which was quite incredible. It was there were so many different things. There were 70 sessions. They were, of course, video. There was PowerPoints, and you could see the facilitators presenting on a wide array of subjects. And that was the best thing I thought about this conference, because normally if people have to travel to Toronto, they can't, because it's quite an expensive endeavor for our teachers. So these, I think the level of the presentations was really heightened, and we got more of a diverse set of presentations, and mostly focused on, of course, supporting online learning. So we got to see amazing sessions from far and wide, all across Canada, instead of just Ontario. And I feel that we had a better experience. And because it's an app, that they use for the conference, I can now go and watch any of the sessions or get any of the materials now just by logging into the app. So it's really weird. I got to go to one in Newfoundland, Ontario, British Columbia, Alberta, Qatar. And a couple of more conferences. So you also get to participate in all of these conferences. It's quite good. So I think for upping the teacher's game, their professional development, there has been, because people have bought into online webinars and conferences and online meetings with other professionals across the spectrum, the teachers are more prepared for the learners.
Mm-hmm. So,
and just to follow up on the institutions I feel have been really supporting learners, teachers as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sorry.
No worries. I was just going to transition to that next question. Are there things that students okay. can do to make their learning better?
Okay. So the learners, if they have acquired the proper technology and if they do have the requisite Wi-Fi, which is really the things we struggled with at the very beginning of the pandemic, basically they have to sort of just do the old, the basics of managing their life around this new way of learning and living. So basically, if they can carve out a space in their dwelling, their apartment or their house, that's quiet and away from distractions. I have my dog. She's always in here. She's good, but she sometimes bothers me. I guess if you have a cat, it would be worse. But they jump everywhere. Sorry.
Oh, it's just agreeing with you.
Okay. So carving out a learning space in your dwelling, it's really, really important. If you have possibly good lighting. Believe it or not, good ventilation is really important as well, so you don't fall asleep. A very comfortable chair, if you can. These things are, you know, they lead to expense, and some people's apartments don't lend to them. If they could put their computer facing a wall so that the computer doesn't face the back of a whole room, so people, when they're online, can see their pictures or whatever's going on in the house, that's good. If the learners could stick to routines, like really be disciplined if they can, and set a schedule when they will do their work, when they will be learning, that's a very, very good thing. If they take frequent breaks, because sitting in a chair is not the best thing for you health-wise. I take a walk. I walk my dog a few times a day. Also, when the courses are given to them, especially online, if they can read the expectations of the course, and maybe they might need somebody else. If they're a language learner, they might get a native or a friend or a relative to help them read the expectations of the course. And that really includes the course syllabus. The course syllabus tells them exactly when things are going to happen, in what weeks, and what the expectations in terms of assignments and readings, possibly, and activities. If you have a very nicely organized learning management system, that's a really good thing, because it's blocked off as a syllabus. It should be anyway. And also, a lot of students, even myself, when I was in university sometimes, I didn't read rubrics. Rubrics are quite popular now. So if you are very common. So if the students could also, before they do an assignment, print or look at the rubric itself, and make sure that when they are doing the assignment, they're aware of that so that they can get the best grade possible by being aware of that. And also, don't be afraid to ask for assistance, technical assistance from the learning management system or the institution or the instructor themselves. Even on a lot of courses, there's at the very top, the learning management system on these online courses, they will have sort of a technical questions forum or a social forum or something forum. A lot of students don't use those, but if they open them up and they post a question, if they're having trouble with an assignment, with access, with understanding a concept, with expectations, they can post it there. And usually, well, pretty well always, someone will respond and help them. So reaching out for help Don't worry, we all don't know everything. So that's what I would suggest.
Fantastic. You mentioned language learners, so let's talk a little bit about that. Is it possible to learn settlement skills and language online?
Yes, it is. There are a lot of tried and true activities, and a lot more are being converted and being produced by the Canadian Language Benchmarks people. They're Canada-wide, of course, but I think they're headquartered in Ottawa. They have all sorts of things. And there's the Tutela Learning Object Repository. It's more of a social community now, but everything that anybody makes in Canada associated with the IRCC, Immigration, Refugees,
Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada.
Yeah, Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada. Anything that is officially made in association with them, and that means it's the gold standard of language teaching and settlement in Canada and settlement issues and teaching, learning settlement issues, goes on to the tutela.ca learning object repository. And it's the teachers and I believe students can go and you can get all of these. You can download them individually. And a lot of teachers download these and put them into their courses, like sort of like Lego. You take
little Lego. Yeah.
Okay. It's very modular. It's very beautiful. And they can snap into different learning management systems. So in terms of learning settlement and language online, I've been in this online learning team for over 10 years now, and I've seen it over and over again. It's a great way to learn. However, it's not as good as having face-to-face in-class classes. But it is possible, especially if the teacher and the institution leverage synchronous on real-time learning.
Are there organizations that are assisting immigrants with their internet access and technology? For many, they might not understand exactly the technology that they might all need or require for these online courses. And what are these organizations?
Yes. So at the very beginning of the pandemic, of course, when students were sort of shockingly locked out, and that happened globally, a lot of the students were at home and they didn't really have a way to reach out. And I think email was the way that most, or telephones were the way that most teachers sort of cobbled through that first few months until we've got more and more people on the learning management systems. There are different initiatives happening in Canada. There's two that I know of. There's one called Reboot Canada. It's www.reboot.canada.ca. And it's Reboot Canada. And basically it's a way for you people with extra technology to donate it. And it's a place where people who require technology for educational purposes to request it. So what they do is they repurpose and they put on, through our partnership with Microsoft, they put Microsoft products on the machines, and then they share them back with the community. I think in some cases, there's a charge of $172 for a full computer, which if you think about it, that's a pretty good bang for your buck, I guess.
Oh, I mean, compared to what I've paid for my setup, that's a great deal.
Right. So I'm not sure exactly how it works, but I know that people have said they've worked with it, they've gone through it. So I'm hoping that it looks like a not-for-profit, and it's the one that people refer me to. So that's one issue, one space. And another is the Government of Canada itself. They have, that URL is crazy. They have a donate to schools, computers to schools program. And it's, if you donate any sort of technology to schools, what happens is you get a tax deduction, a tax write-off. from the government of Canada. And I don't even know how to say that URL. It's so big.
I mean, I can add that in later.
Yeah, it's donate to, it's this, the program's called Donate to Computers for Schools.
Yep, I can find the URL for that. I can even make a bit.ly out of it, so it's nice and short too.
Okay.
For people.
So those are the two that I know of. And what's really been happening from just watching different things and going to some webinars is that individual board, school boards or institutions or any different kinds of organizations have had their own kind of like find technology and get it out to the students as much as possible. I was at one college helping them out in March and April. And what they did was they had a surplus of laptops, like ones that were about 2 or 3 years old, that, and they just repurposed them. And I think it's 75 of them. And they just put a call out and students collected them as loaners. So
that's nice.
Yeah, I think the spirit of that is good. Yeah, for sure.
Just helping out a lot. So, you know, eventually this pandemic will end. I know it doesn't feel like it, but eventually it will end.
Yeah.
Do you feel that settlement and language teaching will return to the old normal? And if so, why?
I think it will and it won't. It will not. I think what's going to happen is it will. It's a big country. Canada is a big country, and we have different providers all across the country to support new Canadians with settlement and with language learning. And I think every single sort of center or board will have to look down and look at the whole layout through a new lens. Like, do we need to have people at this center? And that is it, it does it not just serve as a language teaching center, but is it also a social hub for that community? If it is, then I think it's really important to keep those sort of brick and mortar places where they are educational, teaching people about settlement, but also they're a social gathering point, which is important for people in a new situation. In other cases, though, I think that there's a lot to be said and learned about what we have experienced up until this point and will have experienced by September, that there will be spaces and places and programs that really it benefits the learners more. For example, if they have a family, if they have a job that has different shifts, if they have other responsibilities, if the transportation is an issue, possibly those kinds of centers might just go to fully online. The other offshoot I think that's going to happen is the instructors' educational technology abilities and awareness is so strong now and will be even stronger. A lot of the tools, techniques that they're using now will be integrated into the face-to-face classroom, and that's called hybrid or blended learning. So I think learning will actually be stronger after the pandemic, because we will be thinking more about the learner's situation and the teachers will be stronger. And as well, we will have all of these new techniques, and I think that the learners will have a better experience once they get into a place that where pretty well everybody understands technology and how it works with learning.
Fantastic. And I know you're mentioning that, you know, you've been incredibly busy assisting teachers and educators in closing down the season. I guess, how has that process been like, and what can we learn heading into the next term and future closures if there's a potential kind of push to e-learning like this?
Yeah, well, it's actually kind of a standard thing that if you're a fully online teacher, which a lot of us weren't before, but it's a standard thing to close down a course temporarily. And then what you would do, for example, is first of all, you make sure your grades are sent in, and the evidence of that is put into a file, a giant file. Like if you're using Brightspace or Desire to Learn, that learning management system, you just zip it into a big ball and you store it away for the future. But other learning management systems do it slightly differently. So what you have to do is ensure your grades and the evidence for the grades are stored away. And then for your next term, what you want to do is you want to make sure that your next class takes the best parts of what you've taught of this term, because every term you should be improving your class, you know? So what you can do is you remove the students or unenroll the students from the course that you just taught this term, and you make a duplicate course, make it fresh and wait for the new students to be populated, make some slight adjustments. And one of the big adjustments is hiding all of your content, basically, because you don't want on January, say 26, when you come back to school, for example, the student, you don't want to open the course and have the student see everything. You only want them to see what you want them to see week by week. And so this is really the first time that like thousands of teachers across Canada have had to do this sort of mothballing process. And so this has just been an incredibly busy week for that purpose, because it's a very, very step-by-step process. But really, I'm really impressed with how the teachers have just upped their game during this whole process.
Tune in to 101.5 FM every Tuesday afternoon at 1 to hear more stories from fantastic people across Canada. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk, and have yourself a good one.